a shadow. I am a pishacha. I shuddered. I knew that name from the folktales, a flesh-eating demon, a haunt of cremation grounds. But you know where the Dharmaraja goes?
Oh, yes. Maybe queen, maybe liar. I know. I know. I smell him.
I need to get to the other world, where the night bazaar is, I said, thinking of the bright orchard where he had led me, the nexus between the human world and Naraka. It may be the only place where I could find him and set things right. The horse laughed.
And you expect me to take you?
What can I give you? What do you want? The horse's eyes narrowed.
I'd like to take a bite out of you. Maybe two, if you'd let me.
Cold frissons flared along my spine. But I'm the Rani of Naraka. You wouldn't want to do that.
You don't sound so convinced, said the horse in a sing-song voice.
She sounded delighted.
But if I am, I mean, I am, I stressed, scolding myself, then you would want someone else's blood, not mine. That might get you in more trouble than it's worth. Oh, but you smell so good. And what are repercussions and consequences to something not even alive, not even dead? A half-being like you.
I stared at it.
Maybe. When I prove myself to you about who I am, maybe I can get you a new soul. To eat?
No, to inhabit. A soul that's yours. The horse whinnied and hissed, red steam billowing from her nose and splattering like blood spray on her muzzle.
Fine words, false words.
If I'm wrong, I closed my eyes, praying that I wasn't, then I'll let you take a bite.
Or two,
interrupted the horse.
Or two of me.
The horse stared at me.
Well, I prompted. What assurance do I have? Give me something.
What do you want? The horse flicked her eyes over me.
Your hair. It is matted, but it is lovely. It looks like coal and soft earth, and I would have it.
I was already in rags, already caked in someone else's death. Even if it was a small thing, I hesitated a little. This was the same hair that Amar had cut a length of and wrapped a bracelet from its strands, slid it onto his wrist, and proclaimed it the finest piece of jewelry he had known. But there was no time for vanity. I knelt to the ground, knees sinking into the soft ash, and bowed my head forward, never once letting my eyes move from the horse's. She could kill me in a second if she wanted.
"And you?" I asked. "What will you give me in return?"
The horse blinked.
My name.
What good is that?
It is all I have, said the horse, bowing her head.
A flicker of pity went through me.
It is all I remember.
Then it will suffice. I closed my eyes, tilting my head down. The horse moved softly over the ash, hesitant. I heard her jaws creak open, smelled the rank thickness of rot and sour breath. A soft tear, a strange, but not ungentle, pull, and a single word murmured in the thicket of my scalp.
Kamala, said the horse over a mouthful of hair.
I pulled away, wincing as some of my hair tore through her clamped teeth. What was left fell wetly against my neck. I shivered. I thought I would be furious, disgusted with myself, but when I stood, I felt nothing but calm. I felt light. I shook my head, nearly smiling at the now torn strands about me. Kamala had taken more than just hair. She had taken some weight and burden from me. She regarded me with mild eyes, no longer quite as bloodshot, perhaps just a deep garnet.
How do we get to the other world? Climb atop my back, maybe queen, false sadhvi.
I balked. Kamala barely looked fit to walk on her own,
let alone bear the weight of another person. Her bones jutted out, catching the light. Ghostly reins sprang up around her body, fashioning into a saddle the color of marble. I flashed a weary smile before hoisting myself up. Kamala reared onto her hind legs and broke into a run. My hair, still damp from Kamala's mouth, whipped about my face. I flattened against her back and tried to glimpse our surroundings, but all I saw was a blur of valleys that looked more dead than alive. A strange smell filled my senses, of sulfur and water.
"Where are we going?" I managed to choke out.
"You want to cross into the land of the other world, but it is a guarded thing full of anger," responded Kamala. "To do anything, you must receive the permission of its guardian. We must get to the ocean."
Ocean? My eyes widened. Lashing wind burned my eyes. Eventually, we began to climb over a gray valley before arriving at the rim of a great ocean. My legs ached as I dismounted, and my lungs filled with the briny air of the sea. Tall waves rolled toward us like watery giants, white crests like crowns. A split sky stretched over the ocean, half night, half day. Kamala nudged a conch shell toward me.
"Make no sound, merely hold it to your lips."
I did as I was told, and the crashing waves froze. Chapter 20. The Cloud Bridge. Something dark appeared beneath the surface of the waves. The waves crashed over the spot repeatedly, unearthing two pale mounds in the water. "What is that?" I asked, trying to keep my voice still. Hadn't I had enough of monsters? I was already standing next to a flesh-eating demon.
"Airavata," said Kamala. "Tricky elephant. He likes to knit."
"What does he knit?"
"Clouds."
"Oh." Kamala ignored me and stared with her milky eyes at the white piles in the sea. I followed her gaze, my mouth nearly dropping open. What I had thought were small hillocks of stone were Airavata's gigantic white ears. He rose out of the waves, water trailing through his wrinkled trunk and pooling along the dents of his back. I had never seen an elephant like Airavata. Across his tusks lay a thin cloud, and in his trunk he carried an ivory comb. As Airavata combed the cloud, out drifted dark puffs of air that glinted with lightning. His eyes were filled with warmth, and he flapped his ears in greeting. Artfully looping his trunk around the cloud, he unhooked it from his tusks and placed the comb and cloud onto his back.
"And what is this?"
asked Airavata, leaning forward. His voice was rich and deep, streaked with friendliness and a wizened timbre.
"A demon near my waters, and someone who smells of secrets."
Kamala turned to me, whispering.
"Which one am I?"
"The person full of secrets," I muttered. Kamala whinnied.
"Oh, I hope you are a queen. You are funny. Funny, funny. What does funny taste like?"
She paused.
"Maybe I hope you are not a queen. I would like to taste funny."
"I am certain you do," I smirked before turning to Airavata. "We seek passage to the other world, to the night bazaar."
"Strange place. Stranger still, with chaos, alive and angry."
I swallowed nervously, my thoughts jumping to Amar. Where was he? Was he safe?
"What do you mean?"
"It means that I am spinning storm clouds of late," said Airavata slowly.
He waved his trunk toward a dark cloud that darted around his legs.
"Will you let me pass? I have to get there."
Airavata stared before bowing his head.
"No."
"No?" I repeated dumbly. "You don't understand. I need to be there. I need to speak with the Dharmaraja. I need to get back to..."
"It does not matter to me how or why you must get back. I am merely a spinner of clouds, not a diviner." I cannot augur your heartbreak like entrails any more than I can speak the language of faraway stars.
Why won't you let me in? Kamala turned sightless on me. I thought I saw hunger in her gaze. Not today, I murmured in my head. I will not be demon feed.
I demand that you let me in, I repeated.
Airavata only batted his ears.
You see, that is why. You can only enter the other world by invitation, self-worth, or sacrifice. Or by standing beneath a double rainbow with a belly full of cold, cold sapphires. And I have not seen a double rainbow in 500 years. And I know you have no invitation, for your name is on no list. The way you seek before me now is the way of self-worth, and that you have not earned.
There are demons inside the other world, flesh-eating boots, and wraiths the size of whole countries. And you're telling me that I have to prove myself to join them?
I never said it had to be good self-worth. You could slay 1,000,000 children. Maybe then you could come. But in your current state, your soul cannot handle the other world.
But I was let in before, I protested, thinking back to my wedding day and the hours spent with my arms around Amar's waist. While we walked through jungles, our bodies close. I thought of his promise, his palm welling with blood, his assurances, his kiss.
Why is now any different?
It is different because you are different.
And when I prove myself, I'll somehow find my way back in?
Airavata nodded.
Isn't there something I can give you?
I asked, furiously thinking back to the head of hair that Kamala had eaten off.
Something you want?
Airavata bowed his head.
Poor thing. Poor being of secrets in nighttime. There is nothing you can give me that I would ever take willingly.
What do I need to do?
I do not know. I only know that I cannot let you in. There is something unfinished that you carry with you. Rid yourself of it, and you may enter.
The elephant regarded us patiently, not breaking the exchange. I sensed that he was hiding something, but he wouldn't say, and I wasn't going to press him. I could tell from years spent battling Mother Dina and Mother Shastri when an argument or a rationalization was useless. I opened my mouth to say something, but Kamala spoke first.
Then give us a cloud bridge to get back to the other side. There is more than one way into the other world.
We're just going to turn around? I asked incredulously.
If you know the area where the Dharmaraja will be, I can sniff out his location, said Kamala.
How? I asked.
When death is close, I become alive.
I stared at Kamala. I had already given her my hair and pledged her a bite of my skin. I knew she was bound to help me, but it never struck me that she might do so voluntarily.
Why are you helping me?
Why do I do anything? Why do I hate beets or lust after the feeling of hair in my mouth instead of blood? Maybe I like the thought of being filled, of being less empty, said Kamala with another ghoulish grin. Maybe I am bored, and your company is a funny thing. Your energy is a strange one. You are a pillar of salt I want to lick and break, but save and love.
Where would I even go? I couldn't chase false horizons, hoping it would somehow land me in front of him. There had to be a specific place, somewhere he'd be drawn despite himself. Amar's words floated back to me.
I love you, Johnny. My soul could never forget you. It would retrace every step until it found you.
Retrace every step. Death always visited his familiar haunts. Blood-damp stretches of battlefields, sage-sharp mats of midwives' huts, rain-slick rocks of riverbeds. But maybe there was another place he would go, a place that once had meant something to us. I fished out the onyx stone filled with two memories. I could use it to find my way back to Amar, back to the night bazaar, back to Nrithi and her ice and honey words, back to myself. Airavata batted his ears.
And what do you expect me to do?
We need that cloud bridge, I turned to Kamala. When we get back, there's something I must do, and I hope that will tell us at least where the Dharmaraja will be. And then we can use your talents to get us all the way.
Delightful, murmured Kamala. I have not been so excited since a massacre 12 years ago. All those bodies, so delicious.
Airavata bowed his head in assent. Hooking a cloud between his curved tusks, he began to comb it. A billowy vapor formed a mist over the ocean before flattening into a uniform stretch of white, dotted here and there with iron and purple storm clouds. I reached for Kamala and swung myself onto her back. Gently, I kicked my heels into her side, and we took off onto the cloud bridge. I had thought the cloudy material would be soft, like running on sand or fresh grass, but the cloud bridge was as hard as stone. Airavata walked beside us, sinking ever deeper into the waves, until only his head was visible. His eyes twinkled, a knowing glint in his eye. But if he had a secret to tell, or a thought to give voice to, he would not share it with me. And with that, he sunk beneath the water. As Kamala raced over the bridge, I leaned over, reveling in the occasional spray of seawater. Tears burned in my eyes, but I wouldn't let this failure set me back. I had to succeed. I clutched my mother's necklace tight around my throat, praying it would give me strength, and looked around me. On my left, I could see what the ocean looked like at night. Its waves were higher, the crests of its ripples stretching far onto the shore. I caught glimpses of luminescent creatures bobbing just under the surface. Occasionally, a dorsal fin cut the water. On my right, sunshine capped the waves' gold. Fish as green as parrots wriggled by the cloud bridge, and twice I saw a limpid pink jellyfish. Where was Amar? I turned back to the shore. Already the beach seemed like a distant gray line. I drew out the bracelet of my hair. With my memories came the love I had always felt for Amar, leaving me heavy and weightless at once. I hated that I didn't tell him that I love him, and I hated how those memories, though fleeting, felt like wounds reopened. But even then, I found hope. My heart had not been false, and that knowledge was unshakable and scrawled on the secret joints of my soul, like a spell that kept it whole.
"Are you weeping, young queen?" asked Kamala.
"No," I lied. "The salt is stinging my eyes."
"Pity," grumbled the horse. "I have not tasted tears."
My whole body felt worn out from tension, and I closed my eyes. My arms wrapped around Kamala's neck as I fell asleep. In my dreams, I danced with Amar. We spun in circles to the heavenly music of the Gandharvas. We danced around a wide courtyard filled with colorful birds, until I stumbled forward, my arms spread out to brace my fall. I cried out loud and my eyes fluttered open.
"We are here," said Kamala.
The ocean remained, but the sky above was a normal hazy gray-blue. Before us, a great jungle unfurled dark green leaves in invitation. I rolled my neck. Whatever peace I had found in sleep vanished. All I could feel now were my aching muscles. My skin reeked of salt water, and my hair was whipped around my face. I glanced at Kamala and bit back a gasp. Her once thin flanks bulged with muscle, and her coat gleamed with soft white hairs. Even her eyes were now a dark crimson instead of the rheumy white from earlier. Kamala plodded forward carefully, occasionally warning about low branches.
"Is death nearby? Is that why you look..."
I faltered, gesturing at her dramatically different body.
We are fully in the human world, so death is always nearby. You should see me when we are truly close, False Queen. Then I am a sight to be reckoned with. Sometimes I have lulled away beautiful maids and handsome youths just with my borrowed glory alone. I didn't ask what happened next.
Now what?
Asked Kamala. I took the small onyx stone and pressed it to my lips. The memory shifted under my gaze, translucent and wispy. Now I find out where he will be. I sank myself into that memory, into the moment where we first met, bending my whole body into a single event captured within one of those glittering pinpricks. I had been walking through the chakra forest. Fat moths, the size of palms, wreathed my hair like pearls and moonstones. And then, as I had done since before language burgeoned in the velvet clefts of the mind, I danced. Not a slow dance, but sharp, punctual movements. My dance organized the shadows of trees, canceled the cloying plumes of wind-fallen fruit, aligned the moonbeams themselves. My back arced gracefully as I moved, neck extended like an oryx, fingers conjuring sharp kathas of rhythm, when a sound crunched not far from me. I spun around.
Who's there?
From beneath the heart-shaped leaves of a peepal tree, something rustled. And a voice, so lush it made ambrosia acrid, answered me.
Only the lowly painter who tries each night in vain to capture evening herself.
What do you want? Show yourself.
The stranger stepped out of the peepal tree. He was broad-shouldered, his features as severely beautiful as a strike of lightning. He wore a crown of black buck horns that arced in graceful whorls of onyx, catching the light. But it was his gaze that robbed the clamoring rhythm in my chest. His stare slipped beneath my skin, and when he saw my eyes widen, he smiled. And in that moment, his smile banished my loneliness and limned the hollows of my anima with starlight, pure and bright. He moved toward me, grasping my hand, and his touch hummed in my bones like an aria, a song to my dance, the beginning of a promise. I pulled myself out of the memory. My breathing was ragged. I couldn't push out the feeling that the memory left, something so whole that my body craved and curled around it. I thought my soul was leaning toward the stone, wishing desperately to cling to a truth, a beacon that could guide me back to myself, that raw tenderness, that kiss that said goodbye, come back, and I love you, all at once. This memory showed me hope, and that was something I could chase to the ends of the earth.
We need to get to the chakra forest, I said, turning to Kamala.
She had not moved once since I sank into that memory. She had not laughed, nor gnashed her awful teeth, claggy with blood.
You changed, she said slowly.
What?
Kamala whinnied. You look different. Shade play, shadow play against my eyes. Trust me, False Queen, she paused. Maybe, Queen. I know shadows.
What did I look like?
Like ink spills and umbra, cloudless nights and winter mornings. Lovely, lovely, said Kamala in her sing-song voice. But you wore no crown of black buck horns, and something swirled across your skin. I almost tried to taste it, but I did not want to get swatted by a maybe deity. Maybe deity, maybe deity. Oh, what a song!
I glanced at my arm, ignoring Kamala as she pranced about in a circle, tossing her head and singing maybe deity so loudly it might summon thunder. There was nothing on me but the crust of sea salt and dried ash. I dusted it off. Kamala's words put flesh on the bones of my hope. Still, that didn't give me as much comfort as I'd like. I was asking a flesh-eating demon for comfort.
You wish to go to the chakra forest? Asked Kamala when she was done dancing.
Pearly sweat left a sheen on her coat.
Yes, but there's something I must do first.
My hand closed around my mother's necklace, and I tried to swallow down all those past hurts that had hardened into iron knots. I need to bury this in the place where its last owner lived. Even through my grief of losing Gauri, Airavata's words rang true. To enter the other world and save Amar, I had to release the ghosts of my past. Kamala jutted her nose against my neck and snuffled the necklace before loudly snorting.
That necklace lived in a kingdom that smelled of stone. It is kinder to sadhus and sadhvis than its own people, and its turrets are fat with mango blossoms. It is on the way to the Chakra forest.
My heart clenched. Somehow I felt like Gauri had given me her blessing.
Bharata, I guessed. I suppose that is the name it goes by now. Cities shed names like maidens their tears. Does its Raja look like a toad in a golden jacket?
Skanda had never been athletic. Perhaps, I said, then thought for a moment.
Probably. Then it is so. It is Bharata.
We have to go through it?
It is the only way.
Then perhaps the stars are on our side. I hauled myself back onto her saddle, and we took off through the jungle. The moon turned motes of pollen into drowsy glimmers. I watched them drift past me, snatching them out of the air. They looked like the wishes from Nataka's glass garden. I closed my eyes, letting myself sink into the quiet of it all. In the silence, I wished for all the things I had lost. Love, lives, memories, myself. And I wept for those things as I wept for the dead. And then, like the dead, I released them and hoped with all that was left of me that I could give them new life. I faced the tree-blurred horizon. Somewhere behind that tangle was Bharata, the same Bharata I had abandoned to warfare. Or was it? Guilt slid up my spine. I would soon find out. Chapter 21 The Warrior of Bharata. The jungle zoomed past us, a flurry of brown and green branches with slants of scattered sunlight. Within an hour, Kamala slowed to a trot. Up ahead shined the familiar gates of Bharata. It was missing some stones, but remained sturdy nonetheless. I squinted, leaning forward. There were more guards than I remembered. An outdoor pavilion that I had never seen towered above us, strung with pennants and bearing a strange crest. My father's sigil, a lion and an elephant, for strength and wisdom, had been replaced with a firebird arcing its way toward the sky, while below it was a small golden city. It was superficially lovely. I imagined Skanda thought it meant something meaningful, perhaps an envisioning of a kingdom soaring into the ranks of legend. But to me, it reeked of arrogance. It said, "Let me abandon this city and leave it forgotten in a quest of borrowed greatness." A crowd had formed outside the city gates, people cursing under their breath and exchanging pointed glances. We stopped some distance away from them, and as I jumped off Kamala's back, clouds of dust coated my ankles. I never thought I would be here again. It was strange, like moving through a dream. I held out my hand, closing my eyes to feel the sun beam down on me and wash my skin in bright gold. Hundreds of people crowded the city, but when they saw me and Kamala, they fell silent. My palms turned sweaty beneath their gaze. What was it that sadhus and sadhvis did? Did they utter blessings or stay silent? This thought, however, didn't seem to cross Kamala's mind. She lunged forward, baring her teeth and shaking her mane. Half the crowd scattered.
"Effective," I said, patting her neck. "You're most certainly not a sadhvi," huffed Kamala. "You can go up to them, you know. You can ask for anything you want, and they'll probably give it to you. Nobody wants your curses."
"How do I curse them?" "Wouldn't be a useless skill to have, all things considered."
"Oh, I don't know. You could set me on them."
Kamala smiled and her eyes flashed red. I cringed. Horses should not smile.
Can we get around them to the palace?
All I wanted was to bury the necklace in peace.
I can rend flesh, Kamala huffed. I can't fly.
The crowd had reformed around the gates, still chanting. Their sweat smelled sour, their eyes were bloodshot, and their clothes, tattered things. No better than the ascetic garb I wore around my body. My father would have never let his people dress in such a manner.
I can smell their hunger, said Kamala softly.
I took in their hollowed stomachs and cheeks, the yellow tinge to their skin.
I believe you. It is the scent of drought and famine, an imbalance, no doubt.
Of what?
Of the worlds, said Kamala.
The memory of the tapestry loomed in my mind, the texture of the tear that rent down the middle. Threads writhing, blackened and burning beneath them. The tapestry stretched out, engulfing and weaving the patterns of an infinite number of stories. It's what kept the worlds in balance. The flicker of memories from my time in Nautica rushed through me. I remembered my feet sliding into the reincarnation pool, and the dull warning in the back of my mind, that fleeing would leave behind a horrible tear. A chronic rift. And what better evidence than the threads in the tapestry? I looked at the crowd of people in front of the gates. I didn't want to know how far the consequences of my actions had gone, but I was beginning to get an idea. I couldn't simply bury Gowri's necklace and run. Bharata had once been my home. This earth, now dry and cracked as parched lips, had once hid me from danger. I owed it more than a casual run across its surface. I owed it whatever help I could give. My home may have been broken and shadowed, but it was mine all the same.
Come on, I pulled on Kamala's reins. What about the other world?
Kamala's ears swiveled.
I thought you wished only to cover your cold stone in colder dirt.
It won't crumble away in the time it takes us to know why everyone is furious, I said, but my voice trembled. I knew I was gambling against time. Amar's plea, save me, was an urgent thing, but I had to trust my instinct to tell me what was right and wrong. I heard his voice, echoing and filtered through lifetimes. I remembered when I saw the tapestry for the first time, the gut-wrenching nausea of fighting its pull to rearrange the threads. I remembered when Amar had left me alone in its company. Then his parting words were simple, unfettered. Trust yourself, and I would.
Do you know when the Dharmaraja will come to the mortal world again? Oh, anywhere between an eon and a blink.
That's not even a remotely useful range, I pointed out.
It is what it is.
Well, would you be able to tell when he is here?
Yes.
And we could get to him in time from Bharata?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you just saying yes?
Yes.
Kamala snorted and laughed.
What's the real answer? And tell me the truth this time. Don't forget our deal.
I placed my arm against her muzzle, sliding it across her nose like it was a piece of salted corn. Drool, at least I hope it was drool, fell with a thick splash on the ground. Kamala stared at my arm hungrily.
Maybe. It all depends. That is how things are. Perhaps my first answer was the truth. Any time between an eon and a blink.
I rolled my eyes. Then I suppose that will have to do. But the moment he's here, you need to tell me and we'll go. Kamala nodded begrudgingly. I kept my head low as we pushed through the crowd.
Act like you're chanting a prayer,
hissed Kamala in my ear.
Like what? Mutter something, said Kamala. Do you know how many sadhus I've listened to, let alone eaten? If you don't start muttering something, they will turn on you, and I don't want to eat them. They look like they'd taste horrible. A list or something.
I stammered, trying to draw out the sound into the beginning of a chant. The people of Bharata were beginning to frown at me. Some had even stopped hurling shouts at the gates to watch me fail.
Skies, fingers, teeth,
Kamala nodded approvingly.
Can they hear you? I hissed. No, not at all. Continue talking to me. That will definitely make you seem crazy. Very convincing for a holy person.
Are you sure?
Quite, said Kamala. You are like me, half a thing, mildly insane, a little of the other world.
How comforting, I muttered, continuing with my ridiculous list as we shouldered through people. I held my hand open, smiling and grinning when fat coins were dropped into my palms. But it didn't feel right to take them, especially when the people who were giving the most seemed to have the least to give. So I gave the coins back, and that's when things started getting strange.
The sadhvi has returned our offerings. She is a saint.
It is a sign that the world has forsaken us. Kamala was laughing again.
The horse is also holy. Make way, make way. The first holy sadhu among us is here. We are not forsaken. Make way. Hear what she prophesies.
The crowd around us parted. People's hands were outstretched, running their fingers through my hair, across my collarbones, along my arms. They tried to touch Kamala, but she took it less kindly and snapped her teeth.
You're a holy horse now, I chastised. None of that.
Kamala growled at me.
Don't forget that I get to take a bite of your arm when all of this is through.
We stopped short of the iron gates of Bharata. My father had never closed them. From what I remembered, they were just symbolic and never meant to keep anyone out. In the distance, I could see Skanda sitting on a pavilion wreathed in lotus blossoms and flanked with serving girls. He was, as I had guessed, fat, and in his golden jacket, he indeed looked like a toad.
Ah, I remember him, muttered Kamala.
He's my half-brother.
Nasty, nasty.
I know.
Would you like me to eat him?
Definitely not, I said a little too quickly. I patted Kamala's neck. But I appreciate your offer. It was almost nice.
It is nice to be nice, said Kamala with a sage nod. And it is also nice to eat people, she added as an afterthought.
The crowd of people pushed forward. The iron gates were beginning to open.
A king would never deny a holy person that has come to his doorstep, said Kamala.
My skin was damp with terror as I allowed the crowd to buffet me to the front. A man pulled me from the swarm, his eyes so bright they looked like gems.
You must beg the Raja's audience. He has sent so many of our sons into that war. He has claimed so many of our daughters and not returned them. And now he has forsaken our war hero.
Another woman ran forward, pressing my hands to her cheeks.
Sadhvi, please, please help. The Ujjain Emperor will not let any of them go. He is calling them all prisoners of war, and the Raja Skanda will not ask for their release.
The Ujjain Emperor? Could that mean Vikram? I remembered his mother walking through the other world. She had died the same day, still carrying a bundle of wilted flowers. It meant that Amar had chosen to pull out the red thread. It meant that many of my people would die, but that the kingdom would be saved. Peace would come. I couldn't look the villagers in the eye. Another person tugged on my arm. I looked down to see a boy with a gap-toothed grin.
Tell him to send Gauri Ma. She will win him back.
I stopped walking.
What name did you say?
Gauri Ma,
said the boy again, this time staring at me as though I were a fool. The man who had first approached me nodded fervently.
Everyone knows her, the princess with the dimpled smile and the deadly aim.
She is there now, said the woman by my elbow, still clutching my hand. The courtiers are talking about forcing her to break her vow of chastity. The Raja will make her marry. He will make her leave Bharata, and her wedding will be her exile.
He is furious, whispered the boy.
He mimicked his hands as if he had a swollen belly. Skanda. Joy and fury warred inside me. Gauri was alive. But now they wanted me to send my own sister to the forefront of a war against a kingdom that would claim so many of Bharata's people. The crowd pushed us forward, smiling around mouths full of blessings as they damned my sister.
"Is this what fame is like?" whinnied Kamala into my ear. "How delightful!"
"This isn't fame," I whispered back to her. "This is fear." As we walked forward, I wondered if Skanda had kept our father's sanctum the same. Maybe that's why he held court outside. Maybe he never wanted to see helmets piled up, their spaces in the iron opened up for smiles and screams, or blood-choked cries. Or maybe it was too full of helmets to make room for people and plans. Maybe it was just a mausoleum now. The people formed a dense semicircle around me and Kamala. We stood at the end of the Raja's welcoming hall. It was a makeshift platform. Up close, the lotus blossoms that I thought had strung its sides were nothing more than artfully folded ribbons of silk. Had we run out of flowers, too? Skanda braced his elbows on his knees. The smile he flashed was too narrow.
"You are the first ascetic to pass through the realm of Bharata in quite some time," he said.
A layered greeting. Skanda had at least some shadow of our father's style, but there was also a glint in his eye. He did not believe I was a sadhvi, and I didn't blame him. I moved awkwardly in my hermetic garb, constantly tugging at the turmeric yellow robes and pushing the crusted ash and salt off my skin. Maybe a real sadhvi wouldn't do such a thing.
"To what do we owe this honor?"
Every pair of eyes turned to me. I pushed my body a little closer to Kamala, fumbling for the right words.
I
paused, racking my brains and thinking of the boy's words.
"I'm here to see Gauri."
Skanda's eyes narrowed.
"The Princess Gauri?"
Oh God, I hope I am right. I hope that's who the boy meant. I hope he didn't take me for a fool.
"Why?"
"I have traveled across places, places of great woe, of great—" I turned, looking at the crowd of people pressing up one against the other, and thought about everything they'd said and everything they wanted. "Of great sorrow. I am here to warn you that no place is safe, and that an army is necessary to protect its people."
"We have enough of our army remaining."
Before I could say another word, a furious growl ripped across the platform. I jerked my head up just in time to see Gauri storming across the stage and pushing aside the weak efforts of Skanda's guards to block her.
"Remaining,"
she repeated in a furious voice. I could hardly speak. Joy blossomed in my heart. Here she was. Gauri was safe. More than that, I realized, as I followed the expressions on the citizens of Bharata's faces, she was adored. Gauri was strongly built, and she wore her hair like I once had, scraped back in a tight braid. Even as she glowered, dimples flashed in her cheeks. But the most striking thing of all was what she wore. She had forsaken the garb of the harem women and wore the armor of a soldier. But her outfit was different. It was inlaid with emerald, so that when she moved, the light skittered across the metal like light dancing on a pond. She looked like a beautiful Naga woman, a snake goddess, wreathed in light, moving serpentine and sly.
"You cannot be serious, brother. Even the sadhvi has pointed out the error of your ways. Our city could come under attack at any point. We should be ready. You should send me to reclaim the lost troops from the Ujjain Empire."
"My city," corrected Skanda, this time standing up so fast he toppled a platter of sweets that was waiting beside him.
"My empire. I have indulged you for too long. I allowed you to train beside the other soldiers. I allowed you to show your feats of archery to the citizens of Bharata. I allowed you to leave the harem and walk through the cities, acting as my ambassador. And now you dare to spar with me in front of an audience?"
One man beside me clenched his jaw, and I sensed that a fight would break out in her defense if Skanda made one wrong move. Skanda must have noticed, because he suddenly sat down, his face assuming a blanket of calm.
"Now that the Sadhvi woman is here, perhaps we could let her decide."
No one would argue with that. Even Gauri bowed her head deferentially. I shifted my feet and attempted some measure of mysticism and authority.
"Does your stomach ail you?" whispered Kamala.
My attempt clearly failed.
"I would be honored to settle the dispute," I said loudly.
Gauri was looking at me quizzically, her eyes roving over my face and hands, settling at my neck. Did she recognize the necklace that was once hers? If she did, she gave no sign. I bowed at the hip, deftly spinning the sapphire pendant away from my throat and onto the back of my neck. I loved Gauri, but if she didn't trust me, she might out me as a thief by accident.
"Then it is settled. You will be my guest," said Skanda.
"What about me?"
muttered Kamala in my ear.
"And my horse?"
"And the horse," said Skanda.
With such false graciousness, I almost considered letting Kamala eat him. Chapter 22 Eons and Blinks. There's nothing quite as strange as having an old and familiar haunt explained back to you in an alien language, with unfamiliar words and false skin stretched over each place like a new blanket. Skanda and his retinue of yes-men escorted Kamala and me through the grounds, asking us to bless things. I tried to act spiritual, but I wouldn't consider it a rousing success. When Skanda asked me to make an offering that would bring him happiness, I threw an offering on Varuni, the goddess of wine. And when Skanda asked me to prophesy about the future of his reign and his legacy, Kamala urinated on his foot. Skanda led us through the gardens, his gaze fixed on a pretty attendant who was constantly, although reluctantly, handing him a goblet brimming with some liquid dark as blood. The gardens were a ghost of their former glory. My father had spent years tending these orchards, walking through them with his hands clasped behind his back. Years ago, there had been mirror-lined fountains to catch the sun. The orchard had been so illuminated that each new blossom wore a golden nimbus. There had been fish in inky ponds, shimmering iridescent beneath the water's surface, lively moons in miniature. There had been thousands of trees heavy with jewel-bright fruit. I knew. I had climbed those trees, plucking fragrant guavas and devouring their rose and saltwater flesh right there. All of that had changed. Bharata had changed. The air was leached of all warmth, but that didn't make it any less dry and dusty in my throat. The trees had been reduced to mere spindles. Someone had strung pennants in them, but they hung limply in the windless air. My throat tightened as I stared at the place that had once been so familiar. If Bharata hadn't believed in ghosts when I lived beneath its walls, then it certainly believed in them now. This place, this city looked carven and gaunt. When we stood in the garden, Skanda dismissed everyone, even Gauri, despite how stubborn she was about never letting us out of her sight, caught his mood and left.
"This is where my father once instructed me," said Skanda, pointing to a familiar row of now desiccated neem, sweet almond, and fig trees.
Scolded, more like. I resisted the urge to laugh.
"It is rare that a ruler would spend time in the company of his offspring. No doubt you are quite blessed, Your Majesty. What lessons did he impart?"
"He once told me to remember that the illusion of power is just as great as actual power," he said slowly.
I stiffened. He knew I was no Sadhvi.
"You understand my predicament," said Skanda in a wheedling voice.
Kamala cast me a sidelong gaze and whinnied, pawing at the ground. She didn't need to say any words of warning. The moment Skanda spoke, my eyes sharpened.
"Tell me what I should understand," I said.
Skanda let out a long breath.
Times are very different for the realm than what they might have been once upon a time. My father died valiantly in battle. After that, people lost faith. There has been a war raging on the outskirts of Bharata long before I became the ruler of this realm. At one point, we had the upper hand. My father invited the war leaders here for a wedding. My hands clenched. What happened? Skanda shrugged. We don't know. One minute, the girl was there. The next minute, she wasn't. It made the leaders furious. What happened to her? Skanda snorted. Who knows? Who cares? She escaped all this. No one remembered her? I believe she had some horrible horoscope one way or the other. I cannot remember. But horoscopes have gone out of fashion. No one cares about those things anymore. The stars have lied so much to us. I didn't know whether his words were more comforting or dismal. The Bharata I knew had fixated on the abstract language of comets and star patterns. Listening to Skanda felt like examining an old scar. I saw the wound Bharata had left in me, but it was a relic of something time and magic had sewn together. If Bharata could have changed over so many years into some entirely different beast, then maybe I had too. The people have not seen a sadhu come through our palace walls in years, said Skanda. And I know for a fact that you are no sadhvi. My head jerked toward him. Sire, I... No need, said Skanda. Didn't you hear me? I don't care if you're a fraud or not. The illusion is enough. I haven't seen my people this excited in years. I'll pay you whatever you want. Just make sure you put on a good show. In particular, silence my sister. You already met her. What exactly has she done wrong? I tried to keep the protective edge out of my voice, but Skanda's gaze turned flinty. She wants to volunteer herself on a useless reconnaissance mission to find out what happened to a handful of our soldiers. Were they important? They were elite members of the service, but new ones can be trained. Anything and anyone can be replaced, he said, falling silent. Even me. I regarded Skanda. He wasn't as dumb as he seemed. He was, even though I hated to admit it, a little perceptive. If only he wasn't so lazy. Perhaps he really would have made our father's legacy something noteworthy. But I could sense his weakness. He was scared. He was selfish. And that was a dangerous combination. Why don't you want the princess of Bharata to go? Illusion, he said, gesturing with sweaty hands toward the failing orchard around us. I need to hold on to the illusion of power. If that slips the moment Gauri leaves, then I am finished. They'll probably throw me out. What exactly do you want me to do? I do not know. You're the charlatan. Fake something. Some ceremony where you can counsel her otherwise. And then announce it to the realm. It has to be something that all the people can understand and empathize with. Kamala snorted, pushing her muzzle into my hand and leaving dark tracks of mud, and something else, which I didn't want to discover, on my palms. Her anger was a palpable thing. You have my word, sire, I said. Kamala whinnied, nibbling on my arm, and I swatted her. Excellent, said Skanda. You can settle up with the royal treasurer at the end. What do you have in mind? Behind him, a slight shadow dipped in and out, behind a banyan tree. I held back another smile. Gauri. No doubt she'd heard everything. There was no way I would follow Skanda's plan, admirable though it might have been. His heart wasn't in the right place. At least when my father made sneaky decisions, they were always for the good of the country, never just to save face. With your permission, sire, I'd like to hold vigil outside the palace temples and allow those members of the royal court to speak with me at will. If you can convince the Princess Gauri to join in one of the sessions, perhaps have another member of the court, a harem wife whom Gauri is close with, to join and stand as witness to our session,
I can craft the correct words to announce to the court.
Excellent.
He tugged his hand through his hair, and my heart clenched. A brief memory of Amar flashing in my mind. There were so many times in Nautica that I had watched him do something similar. So many times that he had twirled one dark curl around his long fingers. I needed to get back to him. I couldn't let go of too much time.
By your leave, Your Majesty, I would like to hold that session today.
Today?
Repeated Skanda, stunned.
I believe it would look more natural to your citizens. An immediate announcement revealing the change in the princess's mind would show some transparency, that perhaps you had not bullied or bribed me into saying such words by holding me within the palace walls for more than a day.
Skanda nodded approvingly.
You're quite bright for a charlatan, Sadvi. How long have you been in this business of deception?
Oh, if only he knew.
Years, I said through a thin smile.
Consider it done.
Skanda pointed me to the palace temple, cast a nervous glance at Kamala, and stalked off in the direction of one of his yes-man advisers.
What is it?
I hissed at Kamala.
I thought you were going to talk right then and there, and then we would have been thrown out.
Kamala wouldn't look at me.
It's the Dharma Raja.
I froze. What about him?
I can sense him.
The blue veins that once stood out so prominently on her skin had begun to sink beneath pearlescent hair. Even the garnet gaze of her eyes had receded into something bright and black, thoroughly animal.
And?
He was here, but only for a moment.
Where did he go?
I couldn't tell you that.
Not for all the salt skin in the world,
Kamala sighed. Do you know where he was?
That's the thing I was trying to tell you, maybe, Queen,
exclaimed Kamala, pawing at the ground.
He was at the Chakra Forest. You were right.
I was right. There was a soft glow of warmth in that knowledge, even if knowing that I had just missed him rent through me like a new wound. I had trusted my instinct, and it had been right. I could have reveled in her words if they didn't make me furious.
Kamala sighed.
But there is something else.
What?
He left something in his stead.
In the same place?
Yes.
What did he leave behind?
I don't know. My own senses do not tell me such things. Though that would be a great help. I wouldn't have to lie in wait, hiding behind bushes and hoping some unsuspecting stupid person would wander past me. They might even wear such signs on their heads proclaiming, "Eat me!" And such a thing would be...
Is the thing moving?
Yes, yes, but only in the area. I think it is dormant. It is waiting, I suspect, for something.
How do you know?
Oh, silly Rani, silly Sadvi, I have had so much experience with death. I know that it is waiting. It is waiting for the soft thud of freshly culled soles. It is waiting to paint its lips red with blood. It is waiting to crunch bones and wear them like clattering raiment and robes.
Does that mean the Dharma Raja will return to the spot?
Yes.
How long does death usually wait?
Eons and blinks.
I couldn't abandon Gauri, not now. Not when I had come so close to seeing her for the first time in weeks. I had to move quickly. Tell me the moment the Dharma Raja's representatives seem to move, or do anything. Can you do that?
I can. I have. I shall. I will, sang Kamala.
Good. I tugged her reins, about to lead her to the palace temple, when I heard a soft jumping sound behind me and felt the pointed edge of a dagger at my neck.
Stop where you are, impostor.
I stopped. Kamala bent her head to me.
Surely I can eat that one.
No,
I hissed.
No? You won't stop?
said the voice, laughing. Gauri.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the horse.
Kamala snorted indignantly.